Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Listeners, heads up. In the following segment, my guest, Michael Eisner, spoils the ending of Gravity. This comes about 7.5 minutes in. So if you haven't seen the movie and you want to avoid that spoiler, we've got lots of other great segments to listen to. Thought you'd like to know. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and during Michael Eisner's time as the head of Disney, he was one of the most recognizable CEOs in America. He's kept busy since his departure from the company in 2005, hosting talk shows, writing books, heading up the Eisner Foundation, his philanthropic organization. And it is the work of the Eisner Foundation that brings him here today, but we will also talk some government shutdown and current state of the media and things like that. Michael Eisner, thank you for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for inviting me.
Every year, your foundation gives out an award for intergenerational excellence. What does that mean exactly?
Well, we look around the country for those nonprofit organizations that are uniting multiple generations, especially seniors and youth, and bringing positive changes in their lives, both sides of the spectrum, where you would have an organization that specializes in having youth and young kids, high school kids, and seniors building buildings, or whether you have homes where both seniors and disadvantaged youth live together, or you have kids who are teaching seniors social media and making them feel relevant and part of the world. And there are many, many institutions that do this. The Eisner Foundation has been concentrating on both children's issues, disadvantaged children's issues, and issues of seniors. And this is a concept of giving a prize to that organization that puts the two together. And we found, over the years, we found fantastic organizations that do that. We gave out a prize the night before last, $150,000 prize to the winner and $10,000 to the five runner-ups, so to speak.
And the winner is?
The winner this year, first time it was in Los Angeles, is the Motion Picture Television Home and Fund, which has obviously many, many senior citizens that come out of the entertainment business, whether they be editors or grips or writers or producers or actors in their 60s to their hundreds. And they are teaching high school students and college students and are continuing to make films at the Motion Picture Home with these kids together in a media center that not only keeps them involved creatively in their very, very late years, whether they're ambulatory or immobile. Kids are obviously highly enthusiastic, and the spark of excitement in the eyes of the seniors that they've not been totally left behind, and the eyes of the kids who are learning a field that's romantic and interesting from what used to be the number one people in the world in this field. So that is the institution that won it this year.
I thought Malala was going to win. I'm just kidding.
Right.
But there was all that speculation. You know how it goes. So
yeah, I went to almost all the finalists. There were hundreds and hundreds of applications. In New Jersey, there's a great intergenerational orchestra where young kids can play with seniors, and it's just amazing, the excitement between the two. San Francisco, there was a group where they take retired executives anywhere from 65 on, and they put them inside schools. And these people are incredibly knowledgeable, educated themselves, life history. And when they go into a school, they go in with real respect and real knowledge. So there's a lot being done in this intergenerational area, and we just wanted to encourage it and reward it.
My guest is former Disney chief Michael Eisner, who now, among other things, heads the Eisner Foundation, giving out his award for intergenerational excellence this week, as we've been hearing. As head of Disney for more than 20 years, you were among the nation's best-known CEOs and a widely respected figure in the business community. You've made no secret of your Democratic political leanings. So with that disclosure, what kind of an impact do you think the fiscal standoff in Washington has had on business? I gather you've had something to say about that.
Well, first of all, I really am in the middle. I would say I'm more an independent than an either party. But when you're in Hollywood, you're automatically labeled as a leftist Democrat, which is not the case. My sense is, and I don't want to pile on this, but my sense is that this is one of those times that you can actually say, shame on Congress. They misjudged the unconscious, popular feeling of anxiety. We are all used to the Earth being our terra firma, even though it's going 500,000 miles an hour through space. We're all except air as a given, unless you happen to be in Beijing with, you know, a bad day. And we all accept U.S. treasuries, especially in the business community, as the secure place to go home. And when somebody pulls the carpet out on a national basis on the security and comfort and I can sleep at night attitude of a whole country, it really is underestimating the will and the intelligence of people you're dealing with. And it's to me, and I said this, and maybe it was inappropriate, but I thought it was like gangster time. I thought it was like The Godfather. I thought the speaker was like Fredo in The Godfather, who's not only holding the father, I guess the president, under house arrest with a gun to his head, but his entire family is going to kill over something that is not necessary, not thought through, and dangerous. You know, it's one thing to enact laws. It's another thing to create a entire country that sits on the edge of this unconsciousness, this sense of futility. And there are a few things in your life that are strong and give you a sense of some comfort. It's not a surprise in the movie Gravity that just opened that the star ends up swimming to the beach and you see the last shot of her on terra firma, on the earth, finally safe. Well, if you take the business analogy, you're taking the beach away. You're taking away that thing in America that has been sacrosanct, which is our national financial strength and our debt. And for a group of people to walk into a retail store with a machine gun and say, I want everything in this store, and I want you all to be really scared to death, or give me everything in the store. It's a silly way of acting, and it's beneath the people who are elected to Congress. And therefore, I say shame on them.
But what do you really think?
You know, I thought this for a while, and then I thought I said it the other day, and now I shouldn't be saying it anymore because they seem to be, I don't know, coming to some sort of sense, whether it's a surrender or whether it's an intelligent wake up from a bad dream, I don't know. But it's and conflict in our system from Jefferson to Hamilton on through the ages has been there, so that's fine. It's just when stupidity and arrogance win the day. And so I'm aggravated about it, and it's not going to hurt me. It's going to hurt people that have no control over their lives, and they're going to feel less control from now on.
And I guess when you feel strongly about something and you come from Hollywood, you use analogies to The Godfather and to Gravity. Let me ask you about media. In 1996, Bill Gates made the famous proclamation that content is king, and you've had many media watchers declare this the golden age of content, not only because of accessibility, but also because of the new distribution and funding methods that have emerged in recent years. Do you see this as a golden age of content?
Well, I've had this battle my entire career. Is content king or is distribution king? And when cable came in, they treated content like we were to be in the back room waiting for somebody to call us in. And when I worked at ABC and I worked at one of the three networks, a lot of the people thought it was the distribution that mattered until all of a sudden ABC put content on and became number one. So it's always been content is king. It's just from whose point of view. Today, with the multiple channels, the multiple platforms, the proof that a madman has turned around AMC, that HBO has been made by their shows, that in the over-the-top, in other words, digital, has come of age with House of Cards and Netflix, it's no longer possible for a distributor to say, guys, it's all me, it has nothing to do with content. Nobody is arguing anymore. So it's always been that way. It's finally we're being allowed in the club. How long they'll keep the doors open for this club, I don't know. But right now, there's no discrimination. Content is allowed to the party.
But in this golden age of content and golden age of television, do you feel like real news content is the only thing getting left out of the party? It's as if it seems journalism is the only thing with no business model anymore, while, you know, there's a golden age for everything else.
Well, everybody thought that about music. You know, about 10 years ago with Napster, everybody thought the music industry was over. It was evolving, and people were selling companies and jumping off bridges and so forth. And music now is back, strong, different ways of distributing it. News is not going away. It's the, you know, just in preparing to talk to you on the phone, the applicable places to find news, to get yourself up to speed, to know what to believe and not to believe, is available. When I was younger, you went to one of three networks, and granted, people say they were very, you know, bipartisan and all that. Now you can go to 20 or 30 different places. When you go to certain cable channels, you know what to expect. My children are so much better informed than I was growing up. So I don't think the dissemination of news is hurting. And I think the ability for journalists to get to the bottom of issues is there with all the tools that everybody else has. What is missing a little bit is the economic model, you know, the New York Times had and the LA Times had and the Tribune Company had and people like that had. But the economic model is just moving, that's all, and will move and will be successful. And there will be places, NPR being one of them, where you actually get unbiased news, and there'll be places where you get very biased news. But go, you were talking about my attachment to the entertainment business, and of course everything I know is out of movies and my education and mm-hmm. my children. Look at Citizen Kane. There was a time when everybody was screaming about William Randolph Hearst and he was controlling the news and there were only X number of papers. And if you went against one of his papers, you'd probably end up in the East River or whatever. So it's not new that people are lamenting the power of the news is in too few hands and all that. But it happens to be in many more hands than it ever has been before.
Well, I've got to run because we've got to bring the latest news to our listeners. So Michael Eisner, former head of Disney, and also talking about his work with the Eisner Foundation that we started the conversation with. Thank you so much for giving us some time today. Appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.